thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
We are back. It is the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally.
Will T.
How has your day been, my man?
It's been okay. It's been a nice day in the DMV.
Yeah, the weather is sunny. The weather is nice. My car said it's about like 77 degrees.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day outside. They said it's supposed to rain tomorrow, so.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yep.
Like Richard, like Mr. Rogers would say. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A splendid day in the neighborhood. Will you be mine? Won't you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? I actually like, you know, you ever seen the Eddie Murphy version? Mr. Robinson?
No, I haven't.
You never seen the Saturday Night Live skit?
I don't think I've ever seen it.
YouTube it is hilarious. You gotta check it out. Gotta check it out. Let me find my reads real quick. Actually, I'm like all unorganized. Anyway, like I mentioned, we are the Urban Sports Scene. Also listen to our homies, Voice of the Fan, their podcast show. It's at www.blogtalkradio.com/thevoiceofthefan. The show is hosted by Alex and Jeff. Great show, similar to ours. Our show is syndicated on the internet radio station, Real People, Real Talk Radio. This site is managed by our good friends from Apple G's. Make sure you visit the site. It's www.realpeoplerealtalk.com. You also call in. The phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
First off, actually, I had Tanar Jackson was reinstated. I had this down initially, and I come to find out that his contract has been terminated by the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, he was reinstated, but then subsequently his contract was terminated by the Washington Redskins. I guess he didn't pass the physical or something like that. That's from my understanding.
That's what happened?
That's my understanding. That's the early word out of Washington, but I don't know how true or factual that is.
It wasn't like, what, the drug physical?
No, just a physical, football physical. See if he's in football shape, ready to play. So you never know. There could be an opportunity for him to come back on a reduced salary or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, for me, to be honest with you, it doesn't hurt my feelings with the whole situation. I wanted, Phillip Thomas to get this opportunity. I felt like by having Tanar Jackson on the roster, it would be more pressure for them to say, okay, well, let's start Tanar Jackson. I want to give Phillip Thomas the opportunity. I think, and also, I still have faith in Rambo. I'm one of the few Redskin fans that still has faith in Bakari Rambo.
I'm not a Redskin fan or a Washington football team fan, but no, I actually do. You just don't have that amount of talent and just lose it overnight with the transition to the NFL. So I think he just needs a little bit of a time. You know, he needs to step back and possibly, he watched the game from the bench after the first.
You're speaking of Bakari Rambo?
Yeah.
Okay.
After the first couple of games, and then I think he might be suited to have a comeback year this year, backing up Merriweather.
Yeah, I think he'll be backing up Merriweather, and also I think Ryan Clark will be good for him.
Absolutely.
I think that's a calming individual who can have a calming effect on Bakari Rambo, and he's willing to teach. Any vet that's willing to teach is somebody that can influence you in your career down the road. So as a young football player, so I think Bakari Rambo will be okay. I know a lot of people, they look at the plays he didn't make last season, and they want to harp on that. But understand, he was a rookie. You can improve. I think people forget that you can improve.
Yeah, absolutely. I truly agree with you.
All right, but anyway, DMV, this is big news for DMV. DMV's own, and when we're talking about the DMV, we're talking about Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Kevin Durant has been named the MVP, or will be named the MVP of the NBA.
Yeah, they had a press conference today. He was quite emotional up there, giving his acceptance speech, thanking his mom, talking about her dedication to him and her sacrifice that she made for him to get to this point. Very happy for him. The guy really deserved it this year. He came through, put that team on his back when Westbrook was out. Now, coming off of that blowout loss against the Clippers last night, they really, he has to reassert himself and take this team to the next level, because to me personally, even though we all know that Westbrook and Durant are relatively young, but I think the way that team's constructed currently, they have a short window. They may have to add a couple. I'm not going to say blow it up, but they need to add a couple of key pieces.
A short window? Short window?
Well, Durant will be a free agent in a couple of years. There's a lot of speculation that he will come back to this area.
Thanks to that newspaper.
Huh? thanks to the newspaper. And then you never know, just because it just, to me, it just seems like Russell Westbrook wants to be the man. He has a craving to be. I don't hate
not you, not you, but I have an issue with folks. You know what I respect about Russell Westbrook? Because at first I was if you want to deem anybody a hater, I used to be a hater on Russell Westbrook. But what I've seen is that, one, Durant sometimes defers to Russell Westbrook at times at crucial situations. So that's not Russell Westbrook's fault. That's Durant's fault. Secondly, I like that Russell Westbrook isn't changing his game because of the media. I've seen many players, and Kobe Bryant is one of them, that when people say, okay, you're shooting the ball too much, all of a sudden they'll have a game when they shoot the ball maybe 5 to 10 times, and all they want to do is pass the ball. Russell Westbrook's like, screw that. I'm going to play my game regardless.
But I just think this team, if they want to get to that next level, they're going to need a playmaking point guard.
Yeah, they're going to need a play. I agree with that. But they can still do that. They can still get that with Russell Westbrook on the team.
You'll have to draft it. I don't think you can go out in free agency and get it.
No, you can draft it. It's a particular player out there. I mean, there's any – you can get a – you don't even really need an all-star point guard. You need a point guard that is really a facilitator. Yeah, be honest with you, they had that, but they traded him away. And Eric Maynor. That was a role that Eric Maynor, before the injury, was doing well. He would play a Russell Westbrook. They moved Russell Westbrook to the two because we all know Russell Westbrook's really a two. Kevin Durant and, you know, Eric Maynor wasn't about getting the shots. He was about facilitating the ball. So, in that regard, they had that. Even with James Harden. James Harden was that kind of player for OKC when he came in the game.
Yeah,
he was the second unit. Yeah, with the second unit. And even when he played with the first unit, Russell Westbrook would move to the two, or, you know, that's how it really was set up. James Harden would be the playmaker, the guy with the ball in his hand, and he was facilitated Russell Westbrook, or have pick and roll with Collison or Ibaka, or set up Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but back to very happy for the guy. He deserves it. He's the best offensive player in the league now. Currently. Yeah. Offensive
scorer. I think I like scorer.
I think
offensive player passing the ball isn't involved in offense. So I have to say scorer, because he's not the best passer.
I'll give you that. Yeah, I'll say he's the best scorer, yeah.
pure scorer in the league right now. He beat out Melo, and it's been hard.
Yeah, very hard.
That's my dude. Melo's my dude, and Melo will have another chance to show the league anyway, so the league can give him some more respect. But I ain't going to talk about Melo. Obviously, Melo's from Baltimore. That's not really, for some strange reason, that's not known as the DMV for some strange reason.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't get that. But Kevin Durant is from the DMV, the accepted DMV. Is he the best baller ever in the DMV?
No. Currently, no. When he retires, will he have the opportunity? Will he go into the discussion? Absolutely. But currently, no. Elgin Baylor.
Yeah, that's a consensus. I posed the same question on Facebook. A lot of people had Elgin Baylor. Trying to see if anything different. Let me see. Actually, let me look. Oh yeah, my man. A chick, Reese Harris, on this group called Trust Sports, had the question: would you say AI is from the area?
No. He's from the Tri-Water area in
DMV, Virginia.
Well, that people don't consider that the DMV.
Hey, all right, know what? This you're right though. But for some strange reason, AI is grouped into the DMV. Like, people accept him as a DMV baller.
Well, because he came into national recognition at Georgetown. That's why. But people in this area largely didn't know about Allen Iverson until he came to Georgetown. You know, before that, then, you know, there was the that's about him, you know, then being exonerated, then coming up here. So Elgin BNV is Elgin Bay. Then skip two spots, and D, the next best.
I've heard the name Lynn Bias out there. Is Kevin Durant better than Lynn Bias? Lynn Bias never had a pro career.
Say this, Bias was one of our top five explosive player for Lynn Bias. Just did Kevin Durant's ability. Lynn Bias can dunk on just has had an improving mid-range jump shot when he was drafted to Boston. Fortunately, when his life would have played out, because
but you're doing a snoring. What's
that? Oh no, I haven't. If you had to now currently, Elgin Baylor, then go Limbu, and Kevin Durant. I'll go Limbu / Durant at number two, because I eventually
Grant Hill. Because that's what
But in high school and college, injuries truly deterred being reaching that upper echelon, a player that a lot of people thought he would be.
You would consider Grant?
Absolutely.
All right. Because you're Pete Strong. Appreciate the call out.
He's from Reston.
Okay. So Grant Hill, a couple of other folks have. I actually, right now, Sherman Douglas. My man said, Dave Bing.
That's a good one.
Dave Bing was a
Dave Bing.
I'm not saying Sherman Douglas was a ball player.
Yeah, he was a phenomenal high school.
Another one. And so that call out, Lawrence Moten was a star.
When he was in high school.
Lawrence Moten was like, I used to tell, I'm a Georgetown fan. I wasn't for no, but people are like Lawrence Wood.
Yeah, I've always said DC is a basketball town. This put a lot on it. Football is the number one professional sport in this area, but in the grassroots, DC is a basketball town.
And also, and big shout out to Hannibal. I guess Hannibal on Facebook, the Trust Sports Facebook group, Hannibal, HIW, Jarrell. Appreciate that's been watching NBA Celtics. Even really with Syracuse, but true with the Boston Celtics. One more shout out before our next segment.
Phenomenal talent. Kind of took him out.
Let's move down to pregame. Mark.
I has steadily increased over, the NBA strike shortened season. They won 20. Then the next year they won 47. Then this past year they won 51. Won 51 games with a plethora of injuries. What they're reporting is that the firing was due to his person getting along with the GM.
Advisor.
It's not Jerry. It's the GM. I forgot his last name.
The young GM. He's a young guy. I know you're talking about. He's young to the game in terms of being a GM. I know you're talking about.
Yeah, excuse me.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Where was I at? Yeah, and also their insistence this prior offseason on hiring a veteran tactician to replace Mark Malone.
Yeah,
head coach of the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
And then also him demoting Brian Scalabrine to the D League. They had some difference of philosophies.
Okay.
Brian Scalabrine was a guy he brought onto his staff this past year, elevated him to an assistant coach. So is that along with, for some reason, the owner and the GM had extremely high expectations for this team. And I just think currently the way this team is constructed, I don't see it. I know they went out and they gave Andre Iguodala a 4-year, $48 million contract, even though you drafted Harrison Barnes
the year before, and he played well in that postseason. And I want to go back to this, too. You mentioned Harrison Barnes. Any player, if you look at the history of basketball and in the postseason, when a young player is in the postseason and he performs at a high level, usually what that tells you is that the season after, that he's about to ascend to a different level. All right. By benching him after he showed you in the NBA playoffs and against a championship caliber team in the San Antonio Spurs to drop almost 20 a night, then you follow up by signing Andre Iguodala and demoting him to the bench to a point where now obviously Mark Jackson is forced to, because you gave him a big contract, Mark Jackson is forced to play the guy. And he's forced to start him. All right, so the Golden State Warriors organization messed it up, not Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson did a great job with the cards he was dealt with. Andrew Bogut was out for most of the season with injury. Mark Jackson didn't go out and get Andrew Bogut. Excuse me. The organization did so. It was very annoying. Now I'm trying to think about who's going to be next to be the head coach for the Golden State Warriors. Now I know Jeff Van Gundy was mentioned not too long ago. He's been mentioned. Also, I've heard Steve Kerr trying to get Steve Kerr away from the Knicks before. And I don't know why Steve Kerr is such a hot commodity, but I don't get that.
Well, I think it's because he's one of the best analysts in the game, and people are seeing, Mark Jackson made the transition to being an above average coach in the NBA at better endless team. So people are equating that. And then also you have the Steve Kerr didn't do a bad job as the GM of the Suns.
Wasn't great either, though.
Yeah, it wasn't great, wasn't bad. And then also you have the relationship with Phil Jackson as being the new GM in New York. So,
all right, so we'll see how that situation pans out. But again, I think we both agree that Mark Jackson got the raw deal. My man Jordan Avery, listening to our Jordan Avery, who follows us on Facebook, says that he wouldn't mind. He's a Detroit Pistons fan. He wouldn't mind for Mark Jack Piston be the head coach for the Detroit Pistons. Excuse me.
That wouldn't be a bad hire for them. I think Mark Jackson could wonders with a young point guard like Brandon Knight. Brandon Jennings. Also, you know, Mark Jackson played with one of the better big men in the league and Patrick Ewing, so he could possibly go give some insight into the development of Andrew Drummond. Mm-hmm. Detroit would need to decide if they're going to re-sign Greg Monroe.
Which I think is essential.
Yeah, I think
you got to find a way to meet, in my opinion, they should re-sign Greg Monroe.
Josh Smith.
Exactly.
Totally agree with you. But yeah, that's a pretty good suggestion, having him play, being a coach of Detroit.
All right, well, let's move on down to pregame. On Saturday, Floyd Mayweather Jr. did what he's supposed to do. He defeated Marcos Maidana. It was a closer fight than what people expected. Actually, it was a closer fight than what I expected, but I'm going to let Will talk about it since he's the
big. It was a close fight, true, but I think a lot of people who are just casual fans look at Maidana's the vibes that he threw, those wild overhand right, coupled with the pressure that he to Floyd Mayweather. And, how could he lose the fight? I can tell you how he lost the fight. He threw double that Floyd Mayweather threw, but Floyd Mayweather landed more punches. Floyd Mayweather was far more accurate in landing power punches. Mind though, there were, you know, I think probably the first two or three rounds he totally controlled the pace and the flow of the fight. But for me personally, I think from outside of maybe the eighth round, from 7 on down to 12, Floyd Mayweather won those rounds, and then also 4 and 5 started. You know, it was a good showing by Maidana, but Floyd Mayweather just masterful with his ability to slip punches. Even if you look at it, he didn't take a lot of punishment, even though Maidana was throwing those wild power punches. But all in all, it was a great fight. It was than I thought it would be. Maidana definitely made himself a lot of new fans and also increased his value in the ring. And, you know, to set a rematch in September just because a lot of people want to see that fight.
Well, you made a prediction. You made some predictions on your blog, your articles that you wrote, which are on the Urban Sports Scene blog, blog page, which is www.urbansportsscene.blogspot.com. How accurate were you? I went down.
Floyd Mayweather won by, it was a split decision. I wasn't right on. I was right that he won, but not by unanimous decision.
Yeah, but you're right about in terms of what I feel like in terms of what you're judging of rounds.
Yeah.
On most people's cards, the split was kind of funny, but it's okay.
then you had the Bronner fight, which was the second fight that opened the pay per view.
I missed all the fights.
Yeah, Bronner didn't. He did what he had to do.
I didn't hear anything really.
He didn't look amazing.
Okay,
which were a lot of people were looking wanted him to look amazing, but. Me personally, Adrian Bronner, he has a certain skill set. I just don't think I don't see the focus, the laser sharp focus for a guy who's as talented or as good as he claims to be. But we'll see. You know, he's still young. He has a long way to go in this game. He just has to really commit on his craft and continue to get better and also to elevate the level of competition he faces. Then Amir Khan looked good. He did a lot of things better than previously as far as backing out with his hands, you know, avoiding the big shots, good hand move, good footwork, good head movement, throwing his combinations, picking his spots against Luis Collazo. That fight was also a hard fight for people to watch just because of a lot of the clinching, but that was to be expected because Amir Khan and Virgil Hunter. And people who don't know, Virgil Hunter is the trainer of Andre Ward. And if you ever seen an Andre Ward fight, Andre Ward is a great tactician in the ring. But, you know, when he gets close, when he gets inside, he likes to clinch and likes to put his weight on his opponent a lot, which Amir Khan tried to do.
Also, Amir Khan tried to rough
him up. Yeah, he tried to rough him up.
That's interesting. That's different for Amir Khan.
It's not that different. If you look at his fight against Lamont Peterson, that was a lot of Clinton also.
Lamont Peterson clinching in that fight. And I was rooting for Lamont Peterson. But I thought he was clinching most of that fight.
I think that fight was going both ways.
Okay.
But all in all, you know, Amir Khan definitely is standing in the boxing world. You know, I don't see the September weather in America that in America Islamic faith, and they have a Ramadan. Ramadan doesn't end until the end of July, which would cut into his potential training camp. So we won't see that Floyd Mayweather's Amir Khan in September. We'll probably see the Maidana rematch, which is the fight.
So you think this will be the rematch, Maidana versus Mayweather? You think this will be a rematch?
Absolutely. Just
is there a real market? There's a market for that? There's a big money for that?
Yeah, it's big money for the simple fact that Maidana came in and threw a lot of punches. And anyone who watched the fight knows that he was totally winded after the fourth round. He was sucking for air.
You're talking Maidana.
And, you know, for the simple fact, people want to see Floyd Mayweather lose. And this was a fight that people thought that he actually, it was a draw at work at best. Not from my perspective. Okay. Floyd Mayweather I'm not going to say dominated the fight. Carried a very ugly fight. So it's definitely a fight that'll be a rematch again. You know, the seeds are already being sold for it. So, you know, just come September, people will get what they want, him versus Maidana. Again,
Blow him up. He's going to blow him up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he is. What people don't realize is Maidana couldn't really hurt him, and Maidana came in 17 pounds heavier the night of the fight. He came in at 165 pounds. Floyd Mayweather came in, at 148 pounds. So, me personally, if Maidana's going to continue to exert pressure like he did in this first fight, throw 100 punches per round, better shape. Mm-hmm. And also, Maidana, he did a great job, but he needs to not just cut off the ring, but also attack when he cuts off the ring.
Gotcha.
Which is, he did some of it, which was keeping Floyd Mayweather against the ropes. But when he gets him in those close confines, gets him in the phone booth, he has to be able to adjust his footwork so Floyd Mayweather can't slip out, you know, which can't use the, roll his hips and slip away from him and roll to Floyd Mayweather's left.
All right, we'll see what's going to happen. Mayweather, Maidana, rematch. I guess that's what everybody wants to hear. And wants to see, excuse me. I just want to see Mayweather fight somebody else. It's now to a point where I don't need Mayweather rematches. I feel like we're on the last tour of Mayweather. We need to see him fight multiple boxers, not a rematch.
Well, after this September, then he has two more fights left with Showtime. And that'll probably, you know, if Sean Porter continues to win, then it'll be Sean Porter. And then definitely he'll fight Danny Garcia.
Okay.
And that'll be another big money fight.
Not Thurman?
Keith Thurman, at this point, he just doesn't have the following and he doesn't have the wins.
Okay.
If Keith Thurman goes and, you know, let's say Keith Thurman beats a Sean Porter.
Exactly.
Then if he beats a guy, like, let's say Amir Khan, and I don't think Amir Khan will go near that fight just because he doesn't want to blow us off. He just strikes me as, I'm not going to say scared, but he's trying to be more strategic to get exactly what he
wants to get a Floyd. The best chance for him to get a Floyd is not to see like Thurman, who has punching power, and we know about Amir Khan's suspect chin. So the fight that for Amir Khan is not going to help him out.
Yeah, but that's definitely a Keith Thurman versus Amir Khan. I would love to see that fight.
All right, well, down to pregame, we're about to talk about some baseball. The Nats right now are first place in the NL East. The Braves, the Braves were on a 7-game losing streak. How would you grade out Matt Williams so far as the manager of the Washington Nationals?
I would give him a B.
Okay.
I think he's doing a pretty good job of using his lineup, using guys in different spots to try to orchestrate runs. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how this team is able to gel once everyone's reached, you know, Doug Fister, Bryce Harper is still out another 6 weeks. Then you have Ramos coming back. So, you know, once we get to the middle of July, it'll be interesting to see how this team gels. And when everyone's there together, they had their rosters at full strength, presumably. And then also when they get Zimmerman back, it'll be interesting to see. But if I had to grade him now, I would say a B.
Yeah, I would grade him an A just due to the fact of the A-minus for the injuries. He has his team playing good baseball. The pitcher stats played well. He has players stepping up, and Rendon is looking really playing really well at third base since Ryan Zimmerman's been out. So because of the injuries, the players they lost, Harper, Zimmerman, and also Ramos, the catcher. So this team is now in this position. This team right now is playing good baseball. I can't imagine how well they'll be playing when they get all their guns back. Why are we giving him an A minus? I'm not a fan of him mixing his lineup all the time. I think players are creatures of habits. If they get an opportunity, they get to play in that position in that line or within the lineup at that same position in the lineup, say 10 or 12, whatever, or 20 straight games, they'll produce better. So I'm not a fan of his lineup changes, but all in all, an A minus because they're first place. The Atlanta Braves won a division last season, so. Right now, they're first place. So, let's move down to pregame. You want to say, what would you just say, 295 or some crap like that?
Going up 295.
Manny Machado is back for the Baltimore Orioles. Will the O's make a run with him since he's back on the field and in the lineup? I'll start it off. Two years ago, Manny Machado came. They called him up from the minors. The Orioles streak with Manny Machado because he solidified the third base position for the Orioles. Right now, they need Manny Machado to solidify third base position, also to move Jonathan Scope to second base where he's more comfortable. Now, I feel like they have the opportunity to get on a winning streak, but the injury to Chris Davis hurts. So offensively, they're not as potent. But Manny Machado will bring excitement to the ballpark. I think his defense will spark the team defensively and offensively to get this team back on the winning track. Right now, they lost two games in a row. They have Manny Machado. He's been in the lineup for a while now, but they lost two games in a row. Once he gets his feet wet and gets back to playing good, getting back to playing good baseball and getting back to be comfortable. I mean, at the plate, I think defensively he's already there. But getting comfortable, this team will definitely go up. And then when Chris Davis gets back, I think the lineup will even go, you know, 10 times up. And because a lot of players right now are pressing. You can see Adam Jones pressing. So, you know, getting Chris Davis back, having Manny Machado, Nelson Cruz has been a bonus. This team right now is second place. The Yankees are one, I believe, where they get by a half a game or a game and a half. So this team is close. Right now I believe they're down against the Tampa Bay Rays. But this team has the opportunity to put up big numbers when Manny Machado gets his feet wet and also when Chris Davis gets back.
Yeah, I'm just happy to see Manny Machado back after that devastating knee injury that he had. I wish him a lot of success, and I hope him a continued strong season.
Yes, that's nice of you. I hope Manny Machado is listening to the show, but right now he's playing baseball. But if he gets the opportunity to listen to the show, hopefully, you know, he'll give Will his kudo point, his positive notes. Get anything out today? His some kudos and, you know, basically say that. Thank you, Will, for giving me hope.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
Anyway, it's about time for commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the NBA playoffs. The Washington Wizards right now Washington Wizards taking game one from the Indiana Pacers, which surprised me honestly. I thought the Pacers would kind of take game one. Anyways, the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
Your dick.
Deuces.
This is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why.
You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
This you and me, living our dreams, we're all right where we be. My arms are wide, I own eyes, and now all I wanna see is a sky full of stars, a sky lighter.
By the time you hear this, I will have already spiraled up. I would never do nothing to let you cowards f*** my world up. If I was to get struck like lightning fighters, keep fighting, put your lighters up, point them skyward, Had a dream, I was king, I woke up, still king. Nibble is mine for the milk king. Tell nobody else even f*** until it kills me. I swear to God, I'll be the f***ing illest in this music. There is or there ever will be. Disagree, but from now on, refusing to ever give up. Only thing I ever gave up's using. No more excuses, excuse me if my head is too big. Dang it, pardon me if I'm a cocky. But you a slick popping shit on how you flipped your life around. Rockers, got a kid, flip, you the opposite. You stay backwards, it's still you. I love it when I tell him shove it, cause it wasn't that long ago when Marshall sat, busted black, luster, cause he couldn't cut, mustard, muster up, nothing brain fuzzy, cause he's buzzing, woke up from that buzzing. Now you wonder why he does it, how he.
Alright, back from commercial break. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.wallio.podbeam.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crib Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. Call in. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. All right. We're going to talk about the Washington Wizards before the break. The Washington Wizards are up 1-0 in the series against the Indiana Pacers. Thoughts about game one?
I think it was a game that they, I'm not going to say had to have, but they needed to have.
I thought they had to have that game. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought they had to have that game. To me, Indiana coming off a game that they gave them confidence taking game seven against Atlanta. Everybody was talking about how they got their swagger back. They looked good. They looked like the old Indiana Pacers from the beginning of the season. And then so I felt like if they came in the game one against the Wizards and took game one or dominated that game, that would have had a negative psyche on the Washington Wizards, knowing that when they played the Indiana Pacers in the beginning of the season, that Indiana team to dominate the Washington Wizards. So now, to me, in my opinion, the Wizards taking game one gives them that much more confidence to say, okay, this is like Chicago. We can take game two. I think the Wizards are now at a point where like they feel like they're probably the second best team in the Eastern Conference. And Indiana is looking like, all right, wow, here we go again. We're in that situation. We're in a place where, all right, we're back to struggling. We struggled against Atlanta. The Washington Wizards are way better than Atlanta. They just took game one already. Roy Hibbert's like, oh, I'm putting up donuts again. So it's like to a point where this team's psyche is just not there.
Well, you made an interesting point. By taking game one from Indiana on Indiana's floor, they did two things. They, A, took home court advantage, and B, this was a team that had a fragile psyche, you know, coming out of that before the first round started towards the end of the season, then in the first round. And then you kind of shook up their confidence again, because as you stated, you know, game seven versus Atlanta, it looked like the old Indiana Pacers at the beginning of the season. They were moving the ball, getting the ball to Hibbert, dominating on the glass, playing better defense, closing out on the 3-point shooters. But by taking game one, you kind of put the seed of doubt in Indiana's mind. Like, okay, again, will we go through the same thing we went through in the first round? Will we be able to, you know, this is a better team than it is the Atlanta Hawks. So, like, I think it was a game that they, I'm not going to say a must win, but it was a game they needed to win. Then, you know, you go into game two, you really have the opportunity to put your foot on their throat and, you know, win game two. But just realistic, I don't think that we're going to see another double zero for Roy Hibbert. So, you know, we don't know if that's an aberration at this point, or do we know is that closer to what's going to be the reality for this series? And I don't think that's going to be the reality. He's an all-star player.
Who's lost confidence?
I don't know what's going on with him, but he just seems totally detached from the team.
You know, you hear people. there's a rumor out there, right? There's a rumor out saying that Paul George slept with Roy Hibbert's wife. People are mean. You folks did the same thing to LeBron James and Lonte West. They're doing in this situation. I'm not a believer in it. I don't believe the rumor. People always trying to find a reason. The fact of the matter is, Roy Hibbert just been playing. He's been off. And he's been playing terrible. The reason why this looks like a bad series for Roy Hibbert is just that the Wizards' bigs are very physical. All right, Nene is physical. Gortat's physical. These are guys, in my opinion, at the moment that can push Roy Hibbert out of his spot. Like, he can't get the ball in great position all the time. And Roy Hibbert right now needs to get the ball for him to get his confidence up. He needs to get the ball in good position.
Well, I really mean to cut you off, I wanted to get something there. To me, they aren't creating good passing angles to get him the ball on the block. There were a couple. You know, just watching the game on Monday, there were a couple instances where the angles they were trying to get Roy Hibbert the ball was terrible. You know, when you're a big man, when you're that big, you're not one of the most mobile guys in the league. You don't have a lot of finesse. With a big man, when he has his hand up, that's exactly where you need to get him the ball. Not if he has his hand up top, you throw him a bounce pass and try to get him to reach it down low. Roy Hibbert doesn't have the best coordination. So when Roy
Far
Hibbert,
from it.
Yeah, when Roy Hibbert says he wants the ball up high, get him the ball up there. If you're Frank Vogel, start out with some pick and roll and try to reverse the ball to the weak side and get it to Roy Hibbert to get him initiated into the game early.
All right, so question. Let me get to game one, too. Let me get to some positive for the Wizards in game one. With Bradley Beal was playing at a high level. I mean, he was knocking down shots left and right. John Wall continues to set everybody up. And also, Drew Gooden didn't do anything in the last
18
series.
Minutes. What was it? 15 points,
yes.
12 rebounds, something like that.
Yeah, man child.
And five fouls. And, you know, reality, when you, your bench players, your bench bigs, you want them to get a couple fouls. You know, you want them to kind of send a message to say, hey, it's not going to be any easy buckets you come in here. We're going to play a little bit physical. So, yeah, Drew Gooden was phenomenal. Bradley Beal was phenomenal. And to me, John Wall is kind of taking another level as a point guard, as a floor general. He makes every possession count. Whereas during the regular season, there were stretches where it was kind of like, okay, I could throw a bad pass here, but, you know, we playing good enough defense. We'll get back and we'll get a stop. We'll get a couple stops to get us in the game. But no, John Wall is putting an emphasis on making every offensive possession count when the ball is in his hand by making good decisions. He's not making the most flashiest of passes. He's all, you know, if he isn't making the assist, he's making the pass that leads to the assist.
So, all right, on that then, is John Wall and Bradley Beal the reasons why this team is playing at such a high level? I'm trying to figure it out, because obviously in the regular season they went through spurts well, and obviously they had spurts when they didn't play well. But right now, I feel like they are hitting their stride to a point where they look like one of the better teams in the NBA. Not just one of the better teams in the East, but one of the better teams in the NBA.
Well, there are a couple of reasons. You have Nene healthy. And he brings an element to that team where, you know, he can get the ball on the elbow and he can knock down that jumper. Also, he could put the ball on the floor and get to the basket or be physical and knock around teams for. You have Gortat. Gortat is swatting a lot of second chance basketball, a lot of second chance balls out to the top of the key where they can initiate the offense.
He did a lot in Chicago, in that Chicago series of games, the last game, the eliminating game in Chicago.
Third thing, this offense seems like it's more free flowing, whereas prior you would have pick and roll to you to get to death, or they would try to start initiate the offense with Nene. This offense in the playoffs, to me, it just seems like they're going away with trying to either run the pick and roll to initiate the offense or getting it to Nene and let him make a decision with the ball. And defensively, these guys are making every possession count. They're playing a lot, specifically Wall and Bill. They're playing lights out, but they're playing very aggressive defensively because they know that they have Gortat and Nene on the back end to kind of erase their mistakes. So I think more than anything, this is truly the definition of team basketball.
I like that. And also to me, I feel like this team is more focused because it's the NBA playoffs. They can't go into a game and not focus. In the NBA playoffs, every team is going to put out their best shot. And I think to me, the playoffs are kind of has been really good for the Wizards and the young players. It shows them that like they have to be focused for four quarters. We've seen games this season when they've been focused for two quarters. They've been focused for one quarter. You have four quarters if you want to win a championship. And I think this team, in my opinion, though I don't think it's going to happen, they're focused to try to win a championship.
Yeah, it's not going to happen this year. Mm. But they to me, I think the series with Indiana, 4-2 at the worst. Mm-hmm. I could potentially see these guys sweeping them. If they come out Wednesday and they beat Atlanta. They beat Indiana. I could definitely see a sweep. If they put on a consistent showing like they did Monday, and, you know, Indiana just seems like they're having the same problems, and they win this game, I definitely could see the Wizards sweeping them.
I'll go one step further. If they win the next game two, the Wizards win game two, it's a sweep. Indiana's not winning the game in D.C. I'm going to be that bold. They're not going to win the game in D.C. Because it's not Atlanta. This is a different beast. This Wizards team is a different beast. They lose this game. For Indiana, game two is a – game two is like life and death. It's like you can't breathe anymore if you lose this game. Like, so Indiana needs this game. But what has this playoff stage – done for Bradley Beal and John Wall?
It just put them in the national spotlight. Anyone I know, me personally, like I've seen just about every Wizards game that was on TV this season.
I have not. I will not lie.
this just puts the national spotlight on these guys and kind of helps ascend them to the next level. Also, you know, playing this playoff basketball, it's gotten John Wall to have a better understanding of you got to make every possession count. You can't take any possessions off, you know, like throwing those crazy jump passes sometimes when you get stuck, you know, coming off the pick and roll, making a decision and committing to that decision, really trusting his eyes when he sees the defense. So, and Bradley Beal, even though he's 20, this guy potentially going in next season, he'll be the best offensive player for this team.
Score, you mean, right?
Score, yes.
I was about to say. Score, I think John Wall.
Yeah, he'll be the best scorer for this team.
I agree. I totally agree. I want to jump into that too. I'm gonna go use John Wall. I'm gonna go for John Wall first. This playoff series, the playoff stage has shown folks that John Wall is one of the best point guards in basketball. At first, people were like thinking about, okay, this person, John Wall, is ascending. He's getting close, but he's one of the top tier point guards in basketball. We're talking about a guy who can definitely be the best point guard in basketball. I think people are seeing that. You know, I used to have this argument with a lot of people, like, oh, John Wall doesn't have a jump shot. Well, if you look at John Wall, his improvement every season, he's gaining knowledge at the point guard position. Forget the jump shot, but you know, people talk about Rondo. I always thought that John Wall was close to Rondo last season. Now add on to what he's doing now, I think John Wall is better than Rondo. Even I know coming off an injury, he's better than Rondo. John Wall is ascending to a point where now we can talk about John Wall as one of the better point guards. When you talk about John Wall, you can say, yeah, John Wall could be up there as the best point guard in the NBA? Because obviously we can't go against Chris Paul, but we can definitely put John Wall on par with many point guards are up there. John Wall's better than Darren Williams.
He's always been overrated to me, Darren Williams.
But you know what I mean. But you know what I mean, though, right? No, like he's been in all these point guards that people wanted to put him out there. Like, I can have an argument and say John Wall maybe better than Steph Curry. I'm not gonna say because I'm a Steph Curry fan, but I'm saying I can put that argument out there. Now it's out there, and I think this stage has allowed that to happen. Now Bradley Beal, I think people now see, and even me personally, I see Bradley Beal now as a player that could be an all star. Can be an all-star. He could be a star player. I won't say superstar, but he can be a star player in this league for years to come.
No, I definitely think because you got to look at it like this. For the East last year, this past year, you know, Dwayne Wade and DeMar DeRozan were the two, and also Joe Johnson, all-stars at the shooting guard position. He's a far better jump shooter than DeRozan.
Yeah, I agree.
And knows how to come off of picks and score. DeRozan's a better slasher. Dwayne Wade, just healthy. His health has deteriorated, so he's not the player he once was. And Joe Johnson, don't even get me started on Joe Johnson.
Oh, Joe Johnson clutch, though. Oh, man, Joe Johnson clutch. You saw what he did against Toronto? Joe Johnson's clutch. I don't like Joe Johnson, but Joe Johnson is one of the most clutch players in the NBA.
I wouldn't go as far as
I will go
clutch.
That far. He is one of the more clutch players in the NBA.
When Joe Johnson, when there are other diversions that you have to worry about, Joe Johnson will definitely come through. But if you put a team, if you put, say, Joe Johnson carry us, it's not happening.
What are you doing against Atlanta? He was carrying Atlanta. You don't think he was carrying Atlanta?
Listen to what I said. When you put Joe Johnson as the focal point of the offense, won't go far.
Oh, won't go far?
No. Did he go far with Atlanta? Is the focal
oh go
point?
Far? No. I mean, he's not a superstar. I think he's clutch. I don't think he's still a superstar. That's different.
Okay, yeah,
that's different. That's different.
Yeah. He's not a superstar.
Like, I love Nick Van Exel, but he was clutch, but he wasn't a superstar.
Robert Horry was clutch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a different beast. He wasn't a star either, though. He was a role player. He was a clutch role player. He was like an all star. All right. Anyway, let's go into the other game of last night. The Clippers defeating OKC.
The Clippers ran roughshod over OKC. I didn't expect that to happen, but as the game continued to go on and Doc Rivers continued to use his bench, to me, that's going to be the advantage that they have in this series against OKC. OKC has a lot of young talent that hasn't necessarily grown up and been able to play those consistent minutes and come through, such as i.e. Dorian Lamb, Perry Jones, Steven Adams. You know, they have OKC has some nice pieces, but just to me,
don't play them.
Yeah, they don't play enough. Scott Brooks doesn't play them enough for them to be battle tested and ready when they need them, and that's going to be the advantage for the Clippers. Their bench, their depth.
So, what kind of adjustments can Scott Brooks make for them to bounce back? Should he play Lamb and play Perry Jones a third a little bit more? Give those guys an opportunity to be impact players, knowing that Caron Butler's a little older and can't run the floor like he used to. And also, you know, Sefolosha is more of a defensive player anyway. So should he play some of these guys a little bit more in this series?
I think he should, but I don't necessarily know if that's going to make the biggest difference for them. Also, you know, that front court tandem of DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, you know, Serge Ibaka can definitely hold his own against Blake Griffin. But DeAndre Jordan, when it comes to offensive rebounds and putbacks, you know, Kendrick Perkins isn't going to. He's a guy that's go ahead.
Then play to beat. Perkins is one of the most overrated bigs in basketball.
Perkins is just like a space eater just to come through and touch. You know, when guys try to come to the bucket, he's going to touch you.
Yeah, but see, Perkins is good for post players.
Yeah.
If you're a post player, he's playing post defense. DeAndre Jordan's not a post player. He's getting putbacks and dunking. He's an athletic gym rat. Perkins is not going to affect a DeAndre Jordan. He's not
at all.
You know, he's not. Why does player to beat a guy who has size, who is a shot blocker?
I've never understood. Even we know that Memphis let go at the beat.
Yeah.
He was the number two overall player in the draft. To me personally, I've never understood why he hasn't taken over that starting position for Kendrick Perkins.
I thought even when they played him a couple, you know, last season off, I thought he played well with him. Because you're not asking for him to score. He's just there, he's a shot blocker.
Yeah, he's a great shot blocker.
Yeah,
I don't know if he doesn't know the defensive rotations.
Maybe he's not smart enough. I don't know
what the deal is. But to me, you have a lot of young pieces that if you give them the playing time and really develop them, this OKC team could be dangerous. But I think this isn't for a medium nightmare for Adam Silver. This Clippers team will continue to go on, and people will continue to talk about the Donald Sterling thing.
Hey, okay, back to, all right, you mentioned the Clippers and Sterling and it being the Clippers rolling on. Is it the Clippers' time? Like, we last season, people thought, okay, it looked like it could have been their time, Lob City and this, that, and the other. This season, Doc Rivers in play.
I think with Doc Rivers and the way he knows how to get the most out of a veteran team, which they clearly have, I think this may be the time for them to get to the finals.
Oh, the finals?
Yeah.
So you're saying they're getting past the winner of the Spurs and Portland series?
Yeah, they if it's the Spurs, they have too much youth, speed, and athleticism for the Spurs. Portland, that's a team that's on the ascend. They aren't really ready to make that step. They don't have that third guy that's going to come through and carry the team potentially.
Batum, you like Nicholas Batum?
They don't have that third guy. Nicholas Batum is a good utility player.
Okay.
A guy who can do a little bit of everything, but they don't have that third guy that, you know, if Lillard and Aldridge are totally off, that, you know, can come in and drop 20, 25 points for you.
All right, let's go to tonight's game. Brooklyn, Miami. Everyone talks, you know, this is a big series.
The game is currently on now.
It's on now. I should be watching it right now.
I think last time I checked the score, Brooklyn was up by four. Miami was up by four
exactly.
points.
Good job, Miami. I'm sick of Brooklyn.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I understand that. You know, they swept them during the regular season,
yeah. mm-hmm.
but this is a totally different thing here.
It's a different beast, Miami.
Yeah, it's a totally different beast. Excuse me. Actually, Miami is up 55-49 in the third quarter.
Okay.
I have Miami winning this in a tough six games. Tough not meaning the score, but very physical.
Okay.
I think that Jason Kidd will try to make this a very physical series for Miami. Use their bigs that, you know, and kind of institute, hey, when these guys come to the bucket, let's touch them.
See, how can I say this without being too mean? Was it four nothing? That's what it was in the season series.
Yeah.
All right. Dwayne Wade didn't really play often in within those four games. Brooklyn won. That's good. Kudos for them. We all know the Miami Coast. They lose to a lot of teams in the regular season. Brooklyn is this stuff is a little overhyped. Brooklyn beating Miami is overhyped. It's nothing big. I do think Brooklyn could take some confidence out of that, saying they feel good about themselves beating a Miami team. Four times, make sure they're not scared of them, which is cool. But I think Miami's in a whole different level in terms of focus. I think if you see the way they beat Charlotte, though, it is Charlotte and it is the Bobcats. They made sure they got through Charlotte. They knew they didn't get through Charlotte. Charlotte didn't give Charlotte any hope. They took them out 4-0. I feel like Miami has that different focus. Dwayne Wade's playing at a high level. Dwayne Wade looks healthy, and you're getting a healthy Dwayne Wade. You're getting LeBron James, the best player in the world. And you're getting, you know, obviously you got the, you know, Chris Bosh out there who can knock jump shots down. There are things that Miami can do to Brooklyn that will dominate them, period. Joe Johnson has to be spectacular, okay? This ain't Paul Pierce. This Paul Pierce isn't the same Paul Pierce from 3 years ago, all right? So, and Kevin Garnett isn't even a post threat he used to be for Boston. If they had Brook Lopez, I think it would be a little bit easier. I think it would be a threat for them. I actually think it would be more complicated for Miami to get around Brooklyn. I think they would, but it'd be a little bit more complicated. I see this series going four to five. It ain't going six. It ain't going seven. I think Miami gets the first two. Brooklyn realizes, oh, they're in trouble. They pray they better get game three. If they don't get game three, it's a sweep. But it's five at the best.
Okay, well, I'm going with six. I think, like I said, I think it's a tough six that, is physical. One guy that I think for Miami two guys that I think will be key. They're actually two bench players, Udonis Haslam and James Jones. James Jones' ability to stretch the floor and give him a lot of 3-point shooting will be key.
You mentioned for Brooklyn, because I'm actually looking for the Brooklyn side of things. Key for Brooklyn is one, Joe Johnson has to play at a high level. Kevin Garnett, and I know I mentioned it, he's not the same, but even in, you know, when he's playing against Haslam, when he gets in the post, he has to take advantage of that. He can't stay and take jump shots all the time. And he has to win the jump shooting war of bigs between him and Bosch. That's another thing. He has to win that war from like shooting J's all the time. So he has to win that war.
No, I Johnson's going to come up huge for them. I don't get me wrong. I think Joe Johnson is an immensely talented player, but for the money he's been paid, I just don't think. I think he's one of the guys that's vastly overpaid for what he produces.
All right, well, let's go to the next game, the late night game. The San Antonio Spurs are playing the Portland Trail Blazers. The game is in San Antonio. Is Portland a bad matchup for San Antonio with their youth and, you know, their bigs and their dynamic point guard?
I'm not going to say bad. I'm just not going to say – I'll say not favorable for the simple fact that Damian Lillard's a guy that can get into the paint and, you know, create shots for himself and for others. And he's starting to take that, you know, with that this past series, it looked like he's starting to take that step and take his game to the next level. A guy who I think can come, if this guy comes up big for the Blazers, I think it's a totally different series, and momentum swings their way, and that's Wesley Matthews. Had a first good round, a pretty good first round. But if I think Wesley Matthews comes out there and scores consistently within the 15 to 20 points during this series, you know, puts pressure on Manu Ginobili and, you know, Danny Green, you know, as far as defensively with them those guys having to check him, I think this is it's a series that Portland can take. But as we all know with San Antonio, three things they're going to do great. They're going to space the floor. They're going to make the extra pass on offense and on defense. Everyone's going to make the correct rotation coming off of either a double team or coming off of a trap or a pass. And to me, when you get them trap Lillard or trap Wesley Matthews in those corners, they tend to have problems not making the right making that right pass to the middle of the floor, to the high elbow of the floor. So kind of torn on this one, but I'm going to ultimately go San Antonio seven games.
See, this series is going to be real difficult for the Spurs, in my opinion. I think it's a bad matchup because everything the Spurs have and they, you know, they value on the opposite end. San Antonio, the Trailblazers have, and they have him a little bit younger. In the point guard position, you got Damian Lillard, who's just hungry and young. Tony Parker, though, is still playing at a high level, is an older player. And Damian Lillard right now is a dynamic player. He's a young, dynamic player. LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, he's one of the best bigs. He's one of the best bigs in basketball. Period. Going against Timmy D, an older Timmy D. LaMarcus Aldridge is going to run the floor. He runs the floor well. Timmy D's going to have to catch up.
I think they'll put Tiago Splitter on him, so Tim Duncan won't be so worn down.
To use a term that Shaquille O'Neal uses on TNT, that's barbecue chicken.
Okay, I can see that.
That's barbecue chicken. You put, because I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge is such a versatile big. It's not that he's that thorough on the block. He's improved on the block, but his, you know, there's things he can do in the perimeter that's just gonna it's gonna pull Tiago Splitter away from the basket and having Tim Duncan's gonna have to do most of the rebound. The Trailblazers pose a valid threat to the San Antonio Spurs because Robin Lopez is a rebounding dude, and you know, obviously, you know, like again, Tiago Splitter's going to be pulled away from the basket. Tim Duncan's going to have to worry about an energetic Robin Lopez in terms of getting rebounds. And again, I think that pick and roll or pick and pop with Lillard and Aldridge is deadly. That's just something that can really hurt the Spurs. They can't pack it in. You go under the pick, oh my God, what's going to happen when Lillard's a knockdown three-point shooter? You follow Lillard. LaMarcus Aldridge is a deadly medium range jump shooter. So, what do you do? This team is dangerous, and they can defend their position. Now, all that being said, I don't doubt Pop because he's going to come up with something. Pop is the best coach in basketball. And Tim Duncan has amazed me, and just to the point that he can still do some of the things he can do now. So, Yeah, I'm leaning towards the Spurs. If the Spurs in a tough series, I'm agreeing with you, seven. The series in seven. But Tim Duncan, they need a big performance of Manu Ginobili. Ginobili has to have a big series. And not even that. What's the name? Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard has to have a really good series.
Yeah, he
has
Kawhi to have a big Leonard, series. Big series. For San Antonio, he's the key. Like I said, if Wesley Matthews does the things he does offensively for Portland, they may be able to take the series. But Kawhi Leonard, he's got to come up every game on both ends defensively. You know, he's one of their better perimeter, probably the best perimeter defender for the Spurs. And also offensively, he has to bring it to knock down those open threes off of the weak side ball rotation.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, for Portland, I like Nicholas Batum. I think Nicholas Batum is big. Defensively, what he can do, what he can probably, if he can take away Kawhi Leonard, and when Manu Ginobili gets in the game, he can take away Manu Ginobili. You know, just put pressure on Tim Duncan and Tony Parker to carry the team. Then Portland does have a good chance, if he can do that, though. Anyway, it's about time for another commercial break when we get back. Well, when I get back, Will Teague's going to have to leave us. When I get back.
No, I'll stay for the first segment, but then my allergies.
You sure?
Yeah, my allergies.
I'm trying to look out, man.
I appreciate it, man. I want to talk about Washington's football team in the draft.
All right. It's the Urban Sports Safe.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Morning, it's me, Magic Johnson here. I won 5 NBA championships and Olympic gold medal. So I'm calling the shots today. Get up out of bed, into school, try hard, do well. School got me to where I am today. So be there every single day and, of course, give it your best shot.
We're back from commercial break. Will's out here like a soldier, man. He a trooper, man. All if y'all respect Will T, y'all gonna respect him now, man. That grand hustle game, man. This man right here is like struggling. He's about to do the first portion of the show, man. I really appreciate it. Appreciate it.
It's all good. I'm always, you know, even though I don't support the team, I always like to talk to you about your favorite football team.
This is one of the best teams. This is one of the best team. Well, best football cities in the world when it comes to talking about a particular team. But when it comes to talking about that team, excuse me.
Yeah, because you know. One, this area is, you know, it's a lot of transplants. You know, people who aren't necessarily from the D.C. area move to this area for a vast number of reasons. And then also, you know, you have people, even though they may be fans of the football team, they, you know, they have different opinions on, you know, personnel, coaches, strategy, things they should do. So it's always interesting to have a conversation with fans like you of the team.
Fans like me.
Yeah,
what kind of fan am I?
No, I mean, well, I'm not going to say fans like you, but people who are fans of the team.
Okay.
It's always interesting to have a conversation.
All right, let's get into the nitty-gritty. The NFL draft is approaching. It's Thursday, but the Redskins have their pick on Friday. If you were the Washington Redskins, if you were in the organization, who would you target in the second round? Like, who would be your pick?
Well, to me
– Or would you trade the pick?
No, because I think you need to have more impact players on your roster, and I just don't think they have enough impact players on their roster. And I think with the 34th overall pick, you have a prime opportunity to get a guy who can make a difference for you on defense in the front seven. Guys that I like, a guy like Lewis Nix, the defensive tackle, the big nose tackle from Notre Dame. We all know if you're going to run a 3-4 defense, you need that big guy in the middle that can take two and three guys on the block and also push the pocket a little bit. And I think Lewis Nix, he brings that ability to you. Also, what you need is an outside pass rusher, a guy who could potentially be there is D Ford from Auburn. Auburn, I believe they played a 3-4 defense, but he played defensive end. He's a guy who could drop back, who could drop out to linebacker and rush the passer, and could potentially be a replacement for Arakpo if you don't decide to sign him long term. Then there was also the inside linebacker for Wisconsin, Chris Borland.
Yeah.
I believe his name is.
Chris Borland. You're right.
Chris Borland. He's a guy, you know, you with London Fletcher retiring. You need another a guy who could be a mainstay inside linebacker for you. A guy, highly intellectual linebacker, plays, gets from sideline to sideline. So, me personally, I think those are three guys who will be available when the Redskins pick. Washington football team pick. So,
you can hold that one in. Look at you.
Yeah. So, I think those three guys most likely will be available. But my preference, if I were a fan and I had a preference, would be Lewis Nix.
Lewis Nix will be your pick.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I looked down. I did my research. I did my due diligence. And I looked at the board, and I saw, you know, I was gauging. I actually went to Matt Mayock, and, you know, because I respect him so much.
Yeah, I respect the guy.
I respect him so much. I think he's actually better than the guys that are on ESPN, Todd Mechet and Mel Kiper, Mel Kiper Jr. So I looked at Mike Mayock's board. Then I actually looked at some of the mock drafts, and then I kind of went like gauged and see who I wanted. The guy Chris Borland, I do want Chris Borland, but I think we can wait off to get Chris Borland probably in the third round. I think it's an opportunity we can't give him in the third round. So I would take my chances with that. I am not a fan of Tyler Palumbis whatsoever, the right tackle for the Washington Redskins. And if the opportunity presents itself, I would target a tackle, and I want the tackle from Bama. I want Cyrus. Cyrus Quanjo.
Mm-hmm.
I would get him.
You know he's actually from this area, right? He went to DeMatha.
Oh, that's even better. He's physical. I like what I saw on tape. He's physical. Obviously his legs aren't the best. He didn't run a good 40 time, but that's okay though. I don't need my right tackle to be a fast speedster. All right,
you need him to be a mauler.
I need to be a mauler. Trent Williams is great for that. Not everybody can run. You know, not every tackle can run. I need somebody who can kind of like knock people over. And Bama, you're playing fast defense in the SEC. He was knocking folks over. I mean, look at the running backs that came, you know, that he played with. Lacy had holes. What's his name? I forgot the young running back they had.
Yeldon.
Yeah, Yeldon. Yeldon. Yeldon's a beast. Like, excuse me. These individuals have had holes for days.
Trent Richardson.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. These dudes had holes for days. You having a tackle that with that caliber? Come on now. I mean, I would love it. Alpha Morris, you know, we're already scared that Alpha Morris may not be the same with the zone blocking scheme changing a little bit. Now you get a right tackle who can help him out. And also, let's be real. We need to protect RG3. Do you really believe in Tyler Palumbis to protect RG3? I don't.
Well, I've heard that people within the organization, they love Tyler Palumbis, but if he had to start week one, they wouldn't have a problem starting him at week one at right tackle.
I've heard the same thing. I'm not a fan of it. I've seen this guy get bullied. Again, I'm a fan. Like, you know what? You know, I always told you, like, I believe in bully football, not soft football or finesse football. And if you got a guy who's out there willing to maul you, willing to put punishment on you, upon you, excuse me, I'm for that guy. The Redskins, the Hogs, are based on being mean, physical. We can get a guy who can be physical. Why not? So I like that. Also, I looked at a guy. So I do, but I do want it. I do want Chris Borland. I've heard he's compared to Zach Thomas a little bit. I like that. I like a tackling machine, a guy with a high IQ, like you said. Play for Wisconsin. I'm a Big Ten guy. I always think that Big Ten, you know, Big Ten linebackers, they're fairly decent.
Yeah.
They're fairly decent to me, in my opinion. I think Big Ten linebackers, they do well in the NFL. But I think I can get him in the third round. Another guy, a cornerback, if I wanted to go DB, and that's a position I think the Redskins should try to iron out, Jason Vervet, I think he played for, TCU. San Diego's, like, in the mock draft, San Diego is out there, you know, are projected to get him. But if he finds a way to slip to the Washington Redskins, I wouldn't have a problem drafting him before any of the guys I mentioned because he's the first-round grade.
Well, let me ask you this. A lot of wide receivers in this draft.
Yeah.
Very deep wide receiver draft. Let's say a guy who's projected as one of the top five or top three or five wide receivers for some reason slips. Would you want your team to get him?
Well, it depends who the wide receiver is.
Kelvin Benjamin.
Not a fan of him. He's supposed to be a second round pick anyway. I'm not a fan of Kelvin Benjamin. I don't think he doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
He's just tall. Everybody likes him because he's tall.
Marquise Lee.
That's a guy who does it for me. I'm not going to lie. That's a guy I actually would think about getting. I know he's just 40-time slip, but that's a guy I would actually really think about getting. I would think about getting. But you know what? The fear of that is the fear with that, though, is I'm not a fan of the Raiders and getting wide receivers anymore. It just hasn't worked out.
Yeah, it just hasn't.
In the draft, I'm just not a fan of it.
No, I understand.
You know, we tried it already. I feel like we got Deshaun Jackson. I'm happy with that. Deshaun looks good. Why get too greedy? We haven't wanted to. You can play the slot. Who cares? Why get too greedy?
Andre Roberts. Santana Moss.
Why get too greedy? Might as well just.
Aldrick Robertson.
No, he sucked. We can just focus on something else. But Marquise Lee, I thought about it. Like, I would like to have him on my roster, but it's almost the same thing about why did we draft Fred Davis, Malcolm Kelly, and Devin Thomas? Should have probably just got Malcolm Kelly or Devin Thomas.
Or you should have just drafted Deshaun Jackson.
Or that too. I mean, I'm not knocking out or that too, but just get one. You know what I mean? Why get two?
Because it was Vinny.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, I'll just stick on trying to improve the defense and the line, and it will be fine. Because RG3 is your investment. Protect your investment.
Okay. Let's go further on in the NFL draft. Texans have the number one pick. Who do you think they should select?
You know, Clowney. It's Clowney for me. I can't – they can try to – they can talk that Khalil Mack all they want. Clowney's the best talent in the draft. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's the best talent in the draft. I totally agree with you. So I would go with Jadeveon Clowney. But to me, Mack isn't that far behind. Just if you've seen him play, you know, even when he played Ohio, I remember distinctly this past season, that first game, him playing Ohio State. I remember I was like, who is this guy? Because, you know, Ohio State had supremely better talent than Buffalo, but he was always around plays. The interception, had to cut him, and then, you know, they threw the screen pass, then him getting to the quarterback. Khalil's guys that's going to be in the NFL and it's going to be a terror for a long time. But when you have a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, that type of talent you haven't seen that doesn't come around every day, you have to take him.
Yeah, I think you have to. You saw his 40 time. His 40 time was impressive. He's just an impressive beast. Like I told you before, I'm going to be redundant. There's only two guys in this draft that, in my opinion, are superstars, and that is Clowney. I'm talking about superstars. Clowney and Watkins Jr. Everybody else, I mean, you could say, I mean, people, like I said, people could talk about Mack. I have no problem. I know people talk about the Ohio State game. They mention that game all the time. But they mention it, I feel like they're mentioning Mack because he's the anti-Clowney. What that means, the guy who works hard, the guy who's playing, he's a 3-4 guy. And you know he did some big things, granted in Buffalo, and you saw him in a particular game, and you're like, okay, this guy works hard, he's a hard worker, he's explosive, he has this, that, the other. Clowney's a guy that obviously didn't look explosive because he was trying to save himself for the NFL. So Mack looks good to everybody, but anyway, again, Mike Mayock likes Mack over Clowney, and that's what I do. Mike Mayock. This is the one time I really disagree with Mike Mayock.
You named two of the guys you thought would be absolute stars. Give me the other three guys you think would make up the top five players in this draft.
All right, so I'm gonna go with, I told you.
You said Clowney. You said Watkins.
Watkins Jr. I think I'm gonna go with Khalil Mack. I like. Everybody's gonna say I don't like. Greg Robinson, I'm not gonna be biased in Taylor Lewan. That's a Michigan dude. Truth be told, I think C.J. Mosley is five for me. I like C.J. Mosley.
I would definitely go with the first four guys you named, and then it gets kind of iffy to, but no, I'm not going with none of the quarterback. Well,
no, the quarterbacks suck. I'm sorry. I think Derek Carr, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I actually think Derek Carr is going to be one of the better
Me too.
Pro quarterbacks. But if you had to ask me for another guy, a guy who I think has the potential tools to be a, and it's all about his drive and how he learns to play the position, is Barr, AJ Barr from UCLA.
Barr playing the
linebacker.
So outside linebacker.
Outside linebacker. I think he has the physical dominant outside linebacker. He's pretty new to the position. It's all about intellectually, does he get it, and does he have the desire? But I think Barr, just off of physical, off of raw physical ability.
You mentioned first quarterback drafted. You said Carr, but so you think that, do you think Carr should be the first quarterback draft?
I think a lot of people are going to issue on Carr because of his bloodline. His brother played behind probably the worst offensive line to ever suit up.
Can I add into this? People are so hard on his brother. If his brother had a decent O-line, a better situation for himself.
And talent around him.
His brother would be – I would say this much. His brother was just as talented as a guy who played quarterback for them just last year and the year before. Matt Schaub. Just as talented as Matt Schaub. But go ahead.
I think Carr is going to be a good NFL quarterback. But the tape doesn't lie. I still think Teddy Bridgewater. You don't do what he's able to do, put all that tape, and then just – have a bad pro day. I'm still a big believer in Teddy Bridgewater.
It's okay. I was the same way with Geno Smith. I still think Geno Smith is going to be a great quarterback. But I was the same way. Geno Smith was great.
Geno Smith didn't play in a pro style offense.
Geno Smith had a great. He was accurate. I don't care about pro. I care about for real. RG3 didn't play in a pro style offense. I judge accuracy. And accuracy on a deep ball and how you thread it. If you have an arm, not like a little weak arm. You have an arm, are you accurate, and you're accurate on the deep ball. That's what I gauge. And Geno Smith was accurate, but I'm not going to talk about Geno Smith. Teddy Bridgewater.
Very accurate.
He's accurate enough. When I saw him play, I wasn't highly impressed, so I could see how he could drop. I could see it. When everybody was like, he's definitely the number one pick. Like, he's going to be a star. And I was like, it wasn't like Andrew Luck, or when I saw Peyton Manning.
I wasn't saying he wasn't a transformational, generational player like Peyton Manning, like Andrew Luck, and even to an extent, I know you're probably going to laugh at this, but at that point when he was coming out in college, he was thought of it, Matt Ryan.
I'm not knocking Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is a good quarterback.
But some of the things that Bridgewater does, like the ball placement, he doesn't have the zip on the ball, so you know he doesn't have a cannon for an arm. But there are a lot of guys who came into the NFL and developed that zip once the footwork and the body mechanics and techniques was worked out. I just think with the way he sees the defense and also playing in a pro style offense and the ball placement, which is key in the NFL, he has the tools to be one of the better quarterbacks.
So you think Teddy Bridgewater should be the first quarterback drafted? He should be. I don't think he will be the first quarterback drafted.
Yes.
Okay, because it's probably going to be Dill.
I think it's going to be Bortles.
He sucks to me, too.
Yeah, it's just because his size.
I'm not a believer in him either. He came out of nowhere. I'm going to tell you this. I don't believe in people who come out of nowhere. Believer in it, all right? He wasn't a known commodity. I saw him play against Teddy Bridgewater, beat Louisville. I saw that game. Okay, he's okay. He's okay. You know what I mean? I feel like now it's like he's somebody. He's coming out of nowhere. And it's not like he was spectacular in doing it. Learn how RG3 came out of nowhere, but he was spectacular off the bat. We were talking about luck. We weren't talking about anybody. We were talking about luck. But RG3 was spectacular the whole season.
Right.
Bortles has not been spectacular the whole season. It's like, okay, we get to this point. You beat Teddy Bridgewater. Okay.
And then the game at Penn State.
The game at Penn State.
And the bowl game.
The bowl games really got him over. Yeah. Like, the bowl game got him over. Like,
that's the game that really put him over the top for people. But, no, like you, I think he's a second-round guy.
Yeah, to me, there's a lot of second round guys in this draft.
Yeah,
But I'm gonna say this. I think David Carr should be the first quarterback drafted. It won't happen because of politics, but he should be the first quarterback drafted.
I do think David Carr is going to be. I think NFL ready. He's probably him next to Bridgewater are the two.
Has
NFL
an
ready.
Arm. His brother playing in the NFL. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing.
The perception is
because he's a Carr.
Yeah, he's a Carr. So it won't work.
Anyway, yeah. So. All right, I mentioned Johnny Football. Are you a believer in him? Now I've heard reports he can be drafted by Cleveland Browns. He can be drafted by
Cleveland. Would be the Texans. Best fit. Cleveland would be the best fit for him from the standpoint.
That's Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan. B. Cleveland needs to say someone to say hey, to bring you know seat butts in the seats, and C. There's nothing for him to do in Cleveland for him to get in trouble.
That's true.
It's nothing Cleveland. To do in Cleveland. It's Cleveland, like Joe Kim Noah said.
It's Cleveland.
It's Cleveland.
He's friends with a lot of people who want to stay in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Talking to LeBron. Say LeBron, yeah. You know, you left Cleveland for Miami.
Yeah, I think I think Cleveland would be the best bet for him just because.
Well, it's a football town. It would be good for him. I mean, it's not like the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Browns are the Browns. It's a historic team. It could be good. It could be good for him. I could see the merchandising be really good for him.
Yeah,
the
but
merchandise.
If I'm Cleveland, I don't take him with number four, though.
No, I'm not taking him at four at all.
No.
I told you, when you have an opportunity, you still may have an opportunity to get Sammy Watkins Jr.
Yeah.
I'm not getting like Johnny. For the players out there in the draft, you can get a tackle. You can get Jake. You can get Robinson. There's a chance you can get Robinson. Taylor Lewan from Michigan, which I like Taylor Lewan. Obviously, I'm a Michigan fan. But he didn't have a good season last season, in my opinion. I watched him play. He got beat a lot surprisingly a lot.
Yeah, I don't understand as far as if I'm St. Louis, why there isn't more talk of them getting Sammy Watkins
that,
Jr.
It annoys me. Like, you have no idea.
If you say Bradford is your guy, needs a weapon. Yeah. You have a running game.
Did they pick up Kenny Britt?
Yeah.
Okay, I like Kenny Britt. I think that's a good start for actually giving him somebody. But you can get him a stud. Let you get him a bona fide number one right now. He's coming off the injury. Let's not put pressure on him. Let's give him somebody.
Yeah, you know, we think, well, we have a running game.
Yeah. Which running game is that?
No, Zach Stacy. He can, as a rookie, he had like I think he's going to be a very
fancy-friendly running back.
Not fancy. Productive. I think he's going to be a productive running back.
Just give Sam. If you want Sam Bradford to be a star, just give him real weapons. That's all I'm asking for. Give him like Sammy Watkins Jr., Kenny Britt.
Austin.
Yeah, you got Austin. Yeah, Tavon Austin. Yeah,
Cook.
Yeah. You got speed and you got stud. You got studs to go with them. But yeah, Johnny Football.
Yeah, I think to me, if I'm about, because you know, just because of all the injuries, you don't really know how to evaluate Sam Bradford. He was having a pretty good season until he got injured. So what I do is I give him all the weapons he needs, and that way I can better evaluate him. Because if he fails with Tavon Austin and then a Sammy Watkins Jr. and then with a Kenny Britt and then a Jared Cook.
Then you need to get away from him. You know, automatically. Okay, real quick before we leave before the show ends. Other things to watch in the draft, like players we haven't talked about or situations.
One thing I like to watch is the conditions of people's couches when they do that zoom in on their living room. I like to watch their couches. I also like to see the reaction of the family and the folks. And maybe that overzealous girlfriend who thinks
I made it. I'm about to get paid. Prenup.
So those are things. But no, just from a strategic draft, I will watch out for the Atlanta Falcons. They always are an aggressive team.
Yeah, everybody think about them trading up to get Clowney.
Yeah, I would watch them. I would also watch Cleveland also with that, 26 pick?
Yeah.
You never know if they could package some more draft picks and move up if they start to see a run on quarterbacks and there's a guy they really like. And also I would watch the San Francisco 49ers, a team with 12 – two teams I would watch – 49ers and the Jets. 49ers for the specific reason. Just look at that roster. The two biggest gaping holes on there are cornerback and wide receiver. So do you package some picks to move up and get finally that other piece on the outside at the wide receiver position? Also cornerback, watch them in the later, like second or third round. Do they trade some of those excess picks to get a guy who they feel can make an impact? And from the Jets, they have 11 picks. We all know that Rex Ryan is on a short lease, but John Izik is a guy who likes to build through the draft. So do you sacrifice some picks to get an impact player, or do you just play it out and say, hey, we have enough holes on our team. We need even 11 of the best football players to make this team better.
I like that part with the Jets. If I'm the Jets, I'm drafting. I'm drafting all of them. If I'm just, I'm drafting all of them. I'm using my picks. And cause I think Ryan as a coach, he can build his defense that way. So if I'm going to find some pieces for his defense to even make it stronger to a point where he's comfortable running his style of football. For me, Yeah, actually, he's going to be a local. The Redskins, will they trade Kirk Cousins? That's
a good side story. Don't mean to cut, just want to add a little bit of commentary. If there's a run on the quarterbacks in the first round, teams don't get that quarterback there. Look, they call the Redskins and say, hey, what do you want for Kirk Cousins? Mm-hmm. We may have a number two for you this year, possibly a number three or four next year, depending on his performance. So,
yeah, that's a big thing for me. Will they trade Kirk Cousins? Also, will the Cowboys really make a play for Johnny Manziel? You hear talks. Jerry Jones said he won't. It's not a big issue, not a big priority for them. But will they lie and really try to get him? And this is a big thing.
Dez Bryant wasn't a big priority, but they snatched Dez Bryant after he dropped.
And also, big thing, this is also another thing. Will the Minnesota Vikings get Peterson a quarterback in the draft, like an actual quarterback? Like, I would love Minnesota to get Carr.
No, scratch that. Will Adrian Peterson be in Minnesota after the draft? He has a couple of huge payments coming up next couple of years. Like, yeah, 13, 14 million.
Of course he'll be there. It's Adrian Peterson.
You never know. They might
still play at a high level. He ain't showing an inkling of a drop yet.
Yeah, you have a point.
Yeah, I mean, if they let him go, please, I let Alfred Morris go today. All right, we about to wrap up, but real quick, let me give a shout out to an individual who made a comment on a Redskins Facebook page. I told him I'd give him a shout out. It was about who should Redskins draft in the second round. When I mentioned Quanjo. My man said Cyrus has a world – my man MC Brooks, excuse me, said Cyrus has a world of talent, but if he can't stay healthy, then we'll end up with Columbus anyway. So he was saying that he didn't believe in Columbus because because of his knee issues, but then added that, if he can't stay healthy, Columbus will be our starting right tackle anyway. So big looks of – again, I don't want Columbus on my team anymore. I can't stand punk football. to make sure you want to catch our show on our official Urban Sports Scene website, just visit www.walio.podbean.com. You can listen to us there. Also, we're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
All right, it's been real. Appreciate you guys listening to us. Are we doing a draft special on Thursday?
I'm not. Dude, I got to play basketball.
Okay,
all right. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I can't. This is the draft special.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, you know,
no
I can't.
Problem.
I can't even. No, I couldn't do draft special. Besides, I have to meet up and talk about some. This date is over.
Okay,
that's
no problem.
I hope manage. This date is over. I do two things.
Okay,
but we could talk. All right, we can talk in detail about the draft, a post draft show for Tuesday if you're feeling up to it.
All right,
That's
again,
it.
Thanks, thank you all for listening to us. You guys are the reason we do this, and we'll be back next week. Hopefully, I will.
It's
depending on how I feel.
Yeah, hopefully, it's the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces.